Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
We are live. That's right. Make sure your notifications are on for our post show every month after every pay-per-view. I am John Pollock alongside Waiting Moments After Hell in a Cell, featuring the main event involving Cody Rhodes' arm and Seth Rollins that headlined the Allstate Arena in Chicago, Illinois. How are you, Way?
You know, I mean, I know WWE has kind of a policy for not showing too much blood on their broadcast, but we saw a bloodbath today. It was just all contained within Cody Rhodes' chest. One of the most incredible visuals, I would say, in a main event that we've seen in quite some time in the WWE.
Yeah, shocking in many ways. It's, I think, going to be a match that is going to be one of those historical matches in company history. I think it's going to be the defining match that people are going to associate with Cody Rhodes, not just from this for this run moving forward, but I think just in his career. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about the match, but like watching it, I mean, it was incredibly uncomfortable, but at the same time, incredibly compelling, and one that. I mean, listen, it sounds crazy. I also understand why he went ahead and did it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no doctor. I cannot tell you what the risks are of doing something like that, at least, you know, as like what sort of permanent damage somebody might be risking when they are having a professional wrestling performance with a pec looking in that state. I can at least hope that there were doctors back there that cleared him for a performance like this. And hopefully he can still make a full recovery coming off of it. I will say, you know, it is not, to me at least, as concerning as, like, you know, concussion issues or neck issues. You know, we're talking about muscle here. But again, you know, I'm no doctor, so I can't necessarily say for sure.
Yeah. So just to bring everyone up to speed, Cody Rhodes suffered a torn pectoral muscle. It's true if you happen to watch tonight's main event. And so this news, I first heard about this possibility on around Saturday afternoon, and in checking around in it, like that was the word going around that he had suffered a torn pec, and he had been scheduled on Saturday night for a house show in Champaign, Illinois, ironically the hometown of Tony Khan, to be taking on Seth Rollins. And then that match was changed around with Rollins working with Drew McIntyre. And then if you saw the video, Cody Rhodes just did a very brief run-in. He was there at the building, but he came out in his suit. So you didn't see the arm or anything like that. And he did do like very basic physicality. And then going into today, Dave Meltzer reported that it happened when he was lifting weights. And then WWE opened the broadcast on the kickoff show and just fully acknowledged the injury. And we can pull up their exact wording, because they used the same statement over and over again on the kickoff show and then when it started. So Cody Rhodes suffered a partially torn right pectoral tendon during a brawl with Seth Rollins this past Monday on WWE Raw. While weight training in preparation, the tendon tore completely off the bone. However, Rhodes has vowed to still step inside Hell in a Cell tonight. So that was from the WWE side of that. There would have been a partial tear on Monday and then working out a full tear. I don't know if you would have wanted to have been lifting weights when you have a slight tear, but a full tear, obviously, this is a much more significant injury now.
You know, could that part just be them wanting to attribute the injury to Rollins for storyline purposes?
I have no idea. I don't know. It very well could be accurate. I don't know. But a full tear, now you're looking at surgery, and we won't know the timetable. I mean, there have been, you know, back in 2007, John Cena fully tore his pec right at the beginning of October, and he made that miracle recovery and came back at the Royal Rumble the following January. Hunter, at that Saudi Arabia show, teaming with Shawn Michaels, tore his pec. That was the beginning of November 2018, and he did WrestleMania by April. So, I mean, it's always how, when you're talking surgery, it's once they get in there, what they're dealing with. So it would be just pointless to try and guesstimate any kind of timetable. But I mean, that's looking like it's going to need surgery, Wei, and it's going to be some time for Cody, which is really tough. I mean, this is, especially when you watch tonight, this was a big show. As much as we look at the lineup for this, they had a great event. They sold out the Allstate Arena, and this was your main event, and Cody certainly felt like no question, the biggest babyface this company has at the moment.
Yeah, and I think all the more reason why we see that he, you know, did what he did and chose to go ahead with this despite the injury. If it was a match on the card that didn't have the show's gimmick attached to it, if it was not the main event, I mean, I don't necessarily know if we would see, you know, at least we might have seen some sort of performance. But I mean, for Cody Rhodes, fresh out of into the company and wanting to really establish himself as the guy, you can understand all the pressures behind him wanting to deliver not just an appearance on this show, but a performance of a lifetime.
25 minutes.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. So, you know, I'm no doctor. I can't tell you like what sort of like, you know, operation is required to heal something like this. Is there a chance that, you know, a bit of ice will hopefully heal this? I don't know. But if it was torn right off the bone, I suppose
it needs to be reattached. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I would guess that this is that aspect of things will be addressed on Raw tomorrow night. And maybe we're going to get, unfortunately, another one of those speeches, that we just had one with CM Punk, that, you know, now WWE's top babyface is going to be down for some amount of time.
Can a wrestler just have a week of the news cycle to themselves without some other wrestler coming and taking over with some other major change and event? Yeah. A very unfortunate string of injuries right now happening in professional wrestling. But you know, I guess it forces the WWE to, you know, have to come up with different plans. Cause now, do they bring Roman back a bit earlier? Do they move somebody over to Raw, you know, to fulfill that baby face?
My guess, not knowing anything, my guess would be like even more of a relaxing of the brand split. I just think it needs to be done. If you're looking at Cody not being there on Raw, that show is so focused on him at the moment with no championship. And I have no issue with that. I think that this brand split, there is no integrity to the brand split to be maintaining. You're only hurting yourself by keeping these rosters separate. So, but at the same time, it's not like we have this, this giant wave of baby faces that we can just bring in from SmackDown either. This is a company that is very low on baby faces and is losing its biggest one now for an undetermined period of time. So it's going to be tough when you have like these big shows coming up this summer. It's in some ways a very lucrative time in the era of fixed income that you don't have that same kind of pressure. But nonetheless, you are still trying to fill these stadiums and keep your audience engagement on your 3-hour flagship show on Monday nights. It's going to take, I think, some shuffling of the cards, so to speak, of what they have and what is available to them at the same token. Like if Cody was not able to go ahead tonight, you did not have a main event unless you just hotshotted something and threw something onto this show for Rollins to, you know, you press the Brock button and get him or something. It's not like this felt like a UFC card that was all on the main event. And if the main event falls through, you can't go ahead with the pay-per-view. Like they really did not have much of a show if you lost this cell match.
I mean, they were, you know, no pun intended, all in on this main event as the sole attraction. I mean, I think there was some interest in the Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair and Asuka three-way, but when you have only one Hell in a Cell match and this was it, all the more pressure.
And nearly 13,000 people in this arena. It's like, they did very well with this show. And you have to attribute some of that to Cody and Seth, because it wasn't.
Attribute it all on Cody Rhodes, honestly. Like, Seth Rollins is great, but to me, this is hardly a hot feud in that we've seen a guy go 2-0 here. And I feel like if it was anybody but Cody who has that freshness and that attachment to that Chicago crowd, and of course the gimmick of the Hell in a Cell itself as well, I don't know how this would have done.
Yeah, like they did move a lot of tickets before any matches were announced, but there was further demand once they announced Cody and Seth, and that was the clear number one main event.
I mean, so to me, the question is, you know, there's a chance that this person, you know, might be more injured after today than he was going into this, and that maybe the recovery time might have been extended. But was it worth it to arguably make what feels like the hottest baby face that this company has had in quite some time coming out of this?
See, nine times out of 10, I am always approaching this as the person on the other side of the fence. I'm not thinking about this like a wrestler that has a sold out arena with his name on the marquee. And looking at that, I mean, my gut is to say it would never be worth like that risk. But watching that performance tonight and what the legend of this match will be for Cody's career. You know, he very well may have had the mindset, again, a non-medical professional opinion of, it's already completely torn. I can't more completely tear it.
I'm going to have to have surgery no matter what.
Let's go out in a blaze of glory. I'm facing surgery. I've done the worst I can do to this already. Now, and the return on that is this performance that it's like, this is going to be an all-time remembered performance. I don't like, in this era, you are never going to replicate something Mick Foley did inside Hell in a Cell, and I'm glad that we're never going to see that replicated. This is the closest thing to it. I think this is going to be your second most remembered Hell in a Cell performance.
Yeah, time will tell about something like that, but it's hard to, I would say, live up to the very lofty standards of a Mick Foley Hell in a Cell or a Shawn Michaels Hell in a Cell for that.
It's really, it's those two cell matches, and then I think this one that is going to be in people's immediate memory. Like this one, you just feel WWE is going to legendize this match, if we can borrow a Dusty term there. But like this will be what Cody is always attached to. And for those that maybe saw him as, you know, the guy just in the suit every week, like this was just the ultimate gritting, like Hunter going through with the torn quad and how that
this was way more visual, wasn't it? Because we didn't know.
There was no visual with Hunter's. It was only after the fact that you knew what he was going through. And again, that was turned into this legendary performance.
I mean, they not only that, they crafted the entire match around it. You know, down to the incredibly dramatic reveal coming off of the entrance and basing the entire match working around what looks to be a real injury. So, yeah, we'll dive deeper into the match a bit later on.
Yes, we're going to go through the pay-per-view. I also have a few. There was quite a lot of news this weekend, so I want to quickly touch on some news items after. And then we will open it up to our Double Double Ice Cap and Espresso patrons at postwrestlingcafe.com, and we will be taking your calls at the end of this.
Also, written feedback available to all of our cafe patrons as well at forum.postwrestling.com.
All right. How was Paul McCartney?
Great. Had a great time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Drove 4 hours there, went to see the show, had something to eat, and then drove 4 hours back.
I was a little worried about you, Wei. I was a little worried. I was very happy to hear you got home safe.
Probably not the best idea in the world, but I mean, we were kind of under pressure to have to get back for one of the people before this afternoon. So turned out perfectly fine. Yeah, we all took, I didn't drive more than 2 hours at a time, honestly, so it was pretty easy.
Well, let's get into Hell in a Cell. Pre-show was just going over the injury, and what was bizarre was that they prefaced it every time by saying there are rumors circulating that Cody was injured in an attack by Seth Rollins over the weekend. That is not true. Nobody reported that. Nobody said that at all. But they included that in every single explanation of the injury to Cody. Did you notice that?
Well, listen, who knows in the WWE universe what sort of press that they get, what sort of newsletters or dirt sheets exist. I mean, I took it to be a pretty in-canon, non-real-world type of, rumor.
Anyway. So they made that clear right off the top. Byron Saxton did a sit-down interview with Ezekiel, which it was kind of funny. He was excited. He said, surreal for my first PLE after my watching my brother for all these years. He said, Elias walked so Zeke could speak, and his hope is one day to be tag champions with his brother.
I fucking love these. Like, he's great. Typically, they do stuff off the TV for him to tell these stories. And I think just as an interview, he's tremendously entertaining, trying to fit things in there, talking about how this is his first show. And he dreams of one day being tag team champions with his brother. Like, I think he's just really good at the gimmick.
And then the kickoff ended with Jerry Lawler telling a story about wrestling Joe LaDuke when Joe LaDuke tore his biceps right before their match. So tying it all together. WrestleTix had noted over 12,300 tickets out. So it was a sellout of the Allstate Arena, a very strong outing for the company here in Chicago. And we opened with the Raw Women's Championship match, Bianca Belair, Asuka, and Becky Lynch. Very strong reaction for Bianca coming out. And then we just got into it here. A ton of just inventive three-way spots that they came up with. Asuka had this incredible sequence of spinning back fists to Becky, leg kicks, and ending it with a snap German at the end, and it really picked up the audience and was kind of Asuka's big highlight of the match. We saw a code breaker by Asuka delivered to Belair. Becky then comes off the turnbuckle. She's hit with one, and then we got Asuka applying double ankle locks to Becky and Belair simultaneously, and then they did a double rollout. The disarmer attempt was made onto Bianca Belair, and Belair just powered, squatting up to her feet, but Becky holds on, avoiding the KOD, and then there's a double underhook on Becky, and Becky rolls. Asuka goes for the kick, misses her, and kicks Belair, playing off the angle on television. And then with Becky applying the disarmer to Belair on the ropes, there's a hip attack, and I guess Asuka was supposed to nail... It seemed that she was supposed to knock Becky just off the apron, and Belair was like in the middle of it all. And anyway, so Becky goes to the floor. There's an Asuka lock to Becky, and she's getting out of it. She kicks off the turnbuckle, and Belair comes off the top for a double stomp, but she does not connect with any of them. And they just keep going. Belair lifts her up with the double underhooks, and Asuka goes into the buckle. There's a manhandle slam on Asuka. Becky throws Belair to the floor, but Belair returns, throwing Becky to the floor, and she is the one to get the pin on Asuka in 1856 with Becky hitting the manhandle slam. So I would say this clearly sets up Bianca and Becky for a singles match after this. I thought there was a little, the last few minutes, they missed a few things. But overall, I thought this was a pretty entertaining opener.
I thought it was a great match. I think one of the WWE specialties over the past 20 years has been their ability to book a compelling three-way dance. And I thought it was a great example of it tonight. Incredibly high pace of action, really no breaks at all. And I thought for the most part, almost everything was well executed. If there were blemishes, they certainly weren't enough to really make me take too much notice nor affect my overall enjoyment of the match. I thought every person in this match had an equal chance to stand out. And I think, we've seen in the weeks leading up to this, in the months leading up to this, they've had great chemistry between each of them. And when you put all three of them together, I thought it was as incredible as you'd expect. We also have to kind of remember ourselves. The finish I found was interesting here because, let's also, remember that this original program was supposed to be Becky Lynch versus Asuka in a singles match. And Naomi was supposed to get this match against Bianca Belair. I think we can safely say that, despite what unfortunate occurrence might have happened with Sasha and Naomi, this was the better match. I don't think Naomi versus Bianca Belair was going to touch this. And they figured out a way to still probably get to the end destination coming out of this as well, protecting Becky Lynch and, giving Becky plenty of reason to want to get that match afterwards because Bianca Belair stole her pin.
Yeah. So, what would you think? Like, that happens in Vegas next month?
Yeah, probably.
It would seem to make the most sense for them to run that one back.
I mean, unless it's SummerSlam that they might be holding off to, you know, like we saw this week, Ronda didn't defend the championship. So maybe that next month is Ronda and then Bianca Belair versus Becky for the month after that.
You're right. Maybe this match is too big for the intimate confines of the MGM Grand Garden Arena.
Maybe.
MVP and Omos are approached by Cedric Alexander, who offers to clip Lashley's knee and make it a 3-on-1 tonight. MVP says, "You never get the job done, and the Hurt Business is done. It's never coming back." And Omos tells him, "It's time for you to go." So the Hurt Business is done, everyone, a year later. And then we got a replay of MVP's diss track on Bobby Lashley, which was great.
This thing was amazing. I hadn't seen it on the internet. I heard about it, but I hadn't seen it yet.
They aired it on In Your House last night, but I think they had put it online a day before. But yeah, I only saw it on the In Your House show last night.
It was called Fall Mighty. It had great lines such as, referencing
Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, you needed me to rescue you from your blonde ex-wife. EC Dub Champ, that was a joke. As far as classic brands go, that was like New Coke. And something about him having brains like Heenan. So wonderful. I thought it was outstanding.
Yes, if only like this could have been the whole buildup for the feud, which the buildup really wasn't all that.
Again, John, your opinions about the WWE will be infinitely better if you don't watch any TV and you only consume this once a month product. Which again, this show continued to be, I thought, really strong.
Lashley against Omos and MVP. So MVP would tag in whenever Lashley was, you know, reeling from the attack from Omos, and then would just tag out when he sensed any trouble. Lashley drop kicks the knee of Omos and gets him down to a knee, and then Bobby goes for a vertical suplex. That did not work out for him on Omos. Omos does his snake eyes and splash, and then MVP tags in and lands a boot in the corner, allowing Corey Graves to get his Masahiro Chono reference in. Omos then charges, putting Lashley through the barricade on the floor, and Lashley makes it in at the count of 9 and hits a spear to MVP out of nowhere. Omos comes in, and then Cedric Alexander appears out of nowhere and gets tossed out by Omos and sent away, allowing Lashley to then spear Omos. MVP misses the boot in the corner, and Lashley applies the Hurt Lock. And when MVP submits at 8:22, this place went nuts.
I mean, this was, you know, the Rosemont Horizon, the Allstate Arena, you know, what many talents consider to be their favorite arena to work. And you can completely understand why, because this was a Chicago crowd that elevated, I would say, every match on the show, including this one, which I think on its own was really good. But I mean, with a crowd this hot, I thought it really was excellent. It might have been the best match that these two have had in their feud thus far. I think they've been tremendous opponents for both guys, even though this is what, like the third or fourth match we're seeing between the two. I think each one has been different enough. We saw the cage match, we saw the straight up match, and
this would be the fourth if you include Mania.
Right, yeah, and this was a handicap match, but I think they've all, maybe WrestleMania aside, they've all turned out pretty well. The size of Omos has been really the perfect foil to position Lashley as a very successful babyface underdog. And I think Omos himself, like, played a fantastic giant. His intensity and charisma have been really good throughout this feud. MVP, you know, wasn't just kind of your typical chicken shit heel manager. Like, he, you know, they were talking about his credentials. He is a very capable wrestler, but still, I thought he hit very effectively behind the giant. And I do hope that this is the end of this feud, you know, and let the both of them move on, because you had Bobby Lashley signal for taking a fan's replica title at the end of this.
Yeah, he was posing with this fan's title and Graves stating he's calling his shot. So one would assume that that is setting him up, and we're actually building some contenders now. If you have like Riddle in the pipeline, Randy Orton in the pipeline, Lashley, we just had Drew issue the challenge. Now we've got all these matches. We just don't have dates with this guy to fulfill all of these title matches.
Well, I mean, we have Money in the Bank coming up next. So I think, you know, a number of those people would probably make their way in there. Lashley, I could definitely see. Riddle, I can definitely see. It seems like Drew has already earned himself a title shot.
He didn't even bother. It's like, why am I going to go win a ladder match when I can just call a guy out for this show?
He somehow has some sort of hometown advantage that somehow grants him a title shot at that Clash of the Castle. So, but to me, it's looking like Lashley is at least, you know, somebody with a lot of potential to be a Money in the Bank winner this year.
Yes, I agreed with you. This felt like the end of the feud, so I think we'll only get a couple more singles matches on TV,
Yeah.
Just to, you know, quietly move on after this.
I understand the desire to want to keep putting these two together because, again, they have been tremendous opponents for each other. They've really greatly helped each other in their new roles. But I think it's time to move on, honestly, and see if Lashley can find that similar potential with somebody else. See if Omos and MVP can find similar potential with somebody else.
We'll see. Will Omos be in a ladder match next month?
Oh, good. Goodness. I don't know. I don't know about that.
We'll see about it. Yeah, it was, you know, it was fine. And it got like a big reaction at the end. What was hilarious was like they've got the DraftKings sponsorship and it's like pretty much the same ad read as Excalibur, like the same prop bets. It's wild. They're not saying no to that DraftKings money, nor do they have the clout to demand an exclusive in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Owens against Ezekiel. There was a Zeke chant at the beginning, and he drops Owens with this flying knee. Dude, Owens sold this thing. He just, like, fell down to his knees from this knee strike.
The Z-trigger, I saw somebody call it.
The Z-trigger, okay.
Z-trigger.
And then Ezekiel climbs to the top, lands an elbow drop. You're thinking this guy's going to pin Owens in 10 seconds, but Owens kicks out, and then we get into more of a match. They go to the floor. Ezekiel gets busted open here after he's thrown into the post, and Owens is just constantly yelling. He's stomping him. That's Elias! He starts fish-hooking him. Smile for the camera, Elias. Fish-hooking is not legal in MMA.
In the WWE, it's more than fine.
Yes, apparently so. Ezekiel comes back with some stinger splashes, blocks a stunner, but then takes a pop-up powerbomb, kicks out at two. There's another stunner, and there's a counter to a roll-up, a jumping knee on Owens, and then he climbs to the top. Owens knocks him off balance, hits a pair of super kicks, cannonball, and then yells, Elias, before stunning him and winning in 9:22. I love that, the yelling Elias before he put his victim down.
I mean, Owens, of course, has been fantastic throughout this feud. I thought in this match he did a great job weaving in his narrative throughout it. But I think Ezekiel has been great as well, okay? And, you know that I'm a fan of the character, but I thought in-ring he's really taken a step up. The gimmick has really forced him to wrestle a different style, and it's a style that's a lot more physically demanding than what he was doing as Elias and or at least what his older brother was doing. So, you know, I thought he showed a higher level of work rate here than we've been used to. And it was, I think, a impressive performance from him. And one that, you know, this crowd really responded well to as well.
It was a nice match. And I thought all the matches were benefited by this crowd. Like this audience seemed to be into like everything on this show. Edge, Damian Priest, and Rhea Ripley against AJ Styles, Finn Balor, and Liv Morgan. They got the heat on Balor early on as Edge runs him over. He's mocking AJ with his pose. And then after a long period, Balor makes his way to the corner. Styles and Edge are in. Styles hits a Ushigoroshi, sliding knee to Priest, and then blasts Edge with a phenomenal forearm, and Edge is down. And the count is made. Priest pulls AJ to the floor. And then AJ tags in Liv Morgan, so we get the women in, and Liv hits a Rana, hooks the legs, follows with a Shining Wizard and a crucifix bomb, and the crowd is chanting for Liv. Rhea hits a half-and-half suplex. They were working very hard here. Riptide gets countered, and Rhea gets hit with an Impaler DDT. All six come in. Judgment Day is sent to the floor, and AJ and Finn hit Stereo Pescados when Liv goes for a dive and nearly came up short on Rhea. I don't know if she hooked her legs on the rope or was just didn't jump far enough, but it was could have been more scary. But anyway, came down. And then I don't know what happened here, but all of a sudden, like you see AJ after hitting the Pescado, he's cheering. And then some physicality occurred and he's down selling. And he comes back for the phenomenal forearm spot with Damian, and he's busted wide open. And there was fan footage of him just getting up off the ground where he had, I don't know if he cracked heads with someone. That was my only guess. Or if he had gone into the steps or something and just hit himself hard way. But there was a lot of blood here for AJ. He hits the phenomenal forearm, and that's the last we would see of AJ. Edge then sends AJ into the post, taking him out, and Edge sets up for the spear, runs into a small package from Finn Balor, who gets up, Sling Blade, Shotgun Dropkick, and goes for the coup de grace when Rhea Ripley stands in his way. So Liv jumps onto her back, taking her out. Balor can't hit the coup de grace, and Edge gets up, spearing Balor and pinning him in 16 minutes and 3 seconds. So injury to AJ aside, really entertaining six-person tag.
I thought so too, yeah. To my knowledge, this might have been my first time seeing a mixed six-man in the WWE. And, you know, despite the sometimes awkwardness of, like, you know, the women having to both tag out when somebody grabs for a tag, kind of eliminates, like, the idea of the hot tag, you know, when you're doing that. I thought everything felt pretty seamless here. And they told stories across both genders incredibly well as part of this one big narrative. Every segment of the match I thought was pretty compelling. And maybe, you know, Pascal or, you know, Tope aside, like I thought Liv Morgan in particular really continues to stand out as a fan favorite. Every time she tagged in there with Rhea Ripley, this crowd was reacting really strongly for her. They're really engaging with her as a babyface. And you not only have to give her a lot of credit, but I think you have to give Rhea Ripley a lot of credit as well. You know, again, the size dynamic really helps in this situation. I'm not the biggest fan of Judgment Day so far, but in ring, I mean, everybody here was delivered tonight.
Yeah, you know, watching it, like we've seen the Edge AJ dynamic. I would love to see. It probably wouldn't be like a pay per view, but a TV match with Edge and Finn. Like I thought they were really great together, those two, and especially during that end stretch between them. Lashley is in the back, and he runs into his old pal Cedric Alexander, and he said that was for him out there, Cedric, when he got involved and again got thrown out. He says, I need to stand on my own 2 feet. And Lashley says he's proud of him and warns him to never mess with another one of his matches. This is the guy that was like took out his knee on TV and has just been, I don't know. Lashley was extremely forgiving here. Maybe he has pity on this guy.
I think I would, you know, I've never seen a guy so desperate to want to reform a stable as Cedric Alexander. So, I mean, time heals all wounds, I suppose.
We have a Madcap and Corbin video package, which allowed us to once again hear the line, and I huffed and I puffed and I put Madcap into a hospital.
Was it not the hospital?
He didn't. No. That was a separate segment with the hospital. So out comes Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss, who is in fact still Madcap Moss.
Yeah, I stand corrected on Friday. But the announcers were still calling him Madcap, so that was maybe the source of my confusion.
You think people would be confused with two Mosses in WWE between Madcap and O?
Maybe they're related.
They could be. So maybe that's where they're going to go. I was wondering where these characters were going to go after their respective feuds. So it was a no holds barred match. the best comedy of the night was Michael Cole. Here with Corey Graves, and he says Pat McAfee has the night off. So Michael Cole is here for his one match. Pat McAfee, I ain't flying in for Hell in a Cell.
For one match, are you
kidding me? Madcap and Corbin. Yeah. So no Drew and no Ronda.
I mean, again, all the more pressure, I think, for this main event to deliver. Because can you imagine if Cody was not around? You know, they advertise Ronda, they advertised Drew, they advertised Cody in the center. Imagine if all three of them didn't show up.
It's the ultimate sin to advertise and not deliver, as WWE has told us so many times. Unless the shoe is on the other foot, and then it's out of our control. If we want to put these people on our posters and you want to buy tickets thinking you're going to see those people on the posters, that's an assumption you're making.
Mm-hmm.
So they fight to the entrance area, and then it's Moss being, you know, much more serious now, with his different gear, new music. They go by the announcer's desk, and Moss throws an office chair at Corbin.
Yeah, the dreaded office chair. I mean, never mind the Hell in a Cell. You know, we need a pay-per-view around office chairs.
Moss runs into the steps, and this whole crowd, they just want tables. And Corbin picks up on this, and he eventually goes, and underneath the ring, he pulls a table out. This was the loudest reaction of the night so far. And then he slides it back in. Great, great move by Corbin. And this crowd was so angry. He hits a choke slam from the apron, and then he gets a chair, and he's just delivering tons of chair shots. And there's a drop toehold by Corbin, sending, or by Moss sending Corbin into the chair. Corbin comes back with the deep six, and then they're chanting asshole at Corbin. The chair is set up in the corner, and Corbin is the one sent into it. Huge chair shots from Moss in retaliation, a DDT onto the chair, and then a chop block is delivered to the knee of Moss, and with the steps in the ring, they're set up in the corner. Moss stops Corbin, fallaway slam sends him into the steps, punchline, and he puts the chair around Corbin's neck, lifts up the steps, and drops it onto the chair, thus shattering Corbin's neck, I guess.
Mm-hmm. For 3 weeks, at least.
At least 3 weeks. He's gasping for breath as Moss pins him in 12 minutes and 5 seconds, and Corbin is taken out on a stretcher, which means he's coming out on TV, sore, but ready to cut a scathing promo.
Out of an ambulance, you think? All healed up?
Oh, yeah, he'll show up in the ambulance. You're right. Yes. And then we will get his
Yeah. I have to say, I had negative interest in this feud and in this match when it was just, you know, thrown out there on a Friday night. But these two delivered. I would go as far as to say this felt like one of the better matches in Baron Corbin's career. It stood out from the rest on this card in that it was, you know, perhaps, I mean, okay, main event aside, this was up until this point the most violent brawl of anything on the show. But the pace was very fast. It was, you know, very physical, and there was constant activity. And I love Corbin continuing to fuck with the audience by going to the apron and not taking out a table and continuing to tease it.
He was entertaining in this match.
He was, yeah. And Moss, I think, did really well here. Now that you've taken the silliness out of the character, you've taken the straps literally off of him. Seems to be set on the right course, you know, and I'm hoping at this point, too, this is a feud that breaks itself up and they're no longer attached. So we'll see if Moss can survive on his own without this deep storytelling that he's had with Baron Corbin.
Yeah, the next step for Moss is that he's got to have a defining characteristic. Like, that's just the way these characters go, whether he's, you know, like your Big D or whatever it is. But he's got nothing right now. He's just like, he's serious. That's kind of the character. He's not laughing anymore. So, like, whether it's like a personality profile, a backstory, he needs something now of substance if you're going to get serious with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I worry about that stuff, like what they're going to find in his real life that's worth. Your great uncle was a plumber? Really?
We don't have one of those yet. We have a son of a plumber.
They've got the grandson of a plumber.
Grandson of a plumber, I mean, yes.
Then we had. I was looking forward to this. Theory versus Mustafa Ali. Ali is introduced as Chicago's own Mustafa Ali. And he comes out and he's got his Chicago-themed shirt with the Bulls colors. He's got the Chicago flag on his tights. There's not a doubt in the world. If this was any other company, if this was Impact, AEW, New Japan, GCW, Smash Wrestling, if this was any other company in the world, this would be like, this is a layup. It's just so easy. But in WWE, it was like, there is no way.
And I mean, it was at least in doubt. Okay. Like I felt it was so, it's so obvious at this point, like what they do to guys in their hometown, especially like in this case. But because this feud has been so one-sided with like Ali getting beaten down every single
They'll
week,
give him a bone here and say, hey, you need to wait for it to play out.
Yeah. But no, this was, you know, about as a typical WWE.
Cynic in me, I was like, man, they are making this so over the top. Like there's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
The whole crowd, dude, is chanting Ali. This is second from the top, okay? They've got a Hell in a Cell coming up. How many shows do we watch where something's big coming up? You got the cold match before it, which, let's be honest, this build has sucked, and this should have been a cold match, but it wasn't because you had a guy in his hometown going for a title that no one cares about, but tonight they do because our hometown guy is going for that title. So they're all chanting for Ali. Byron is telling us that Mustafa's wife and children are in attendance.
Of course.
Oh, man. Theory is just bailing himself out of the ring, avoiding the fight, and Ali gets lifted and thrown into the post, allowing Theory to take over. He comes off the top, and Ali goes for a super kick and doesn't catch all of it. It's more like his knee connects. And then Theory leaps up into like this split-legged one-man Spanish fly. Ali comes back with a beautiful looking tornado DDT, and then Ali is crotched on top. He goes for the A-Town down, but it's countered into an STF, and this crowd goes wild for an STF, and then he reaches the rope. They boo. There's a tilt-a-whirl into a draping DDT off the middle rope that looked tremendous from Ali. He climbs to the top. The crowd is, oh, my God, he's going to do it. They're all on just into this idea. And then, boom, he gets crotched. Or, sorry, no, he misses the 450 splash. That's when Theory chop blocks the knee, and he lifts Ali by the leg onto his shoulders. A-Town down, Chi-Town down. 10 minutes, 24 seconds. Theory retains and takes a selfie. Guys, I know everyone's going to say, oh, my goodness, like, Ali, you, this whole crowd was behind him. But, man, dude, it was so – the heat was so incredible. Like, the crowd sounded like they didn't even have any energy in them. It was silent.
I think they were running to the ticket office to try to, you know, wait in line for the next on sale for a live event.
Oh, dude, this was just like your exhibit A. I was like, I can't even begrudge it because you know what it is, but it was amazing to watch. Like, the effort they went to dangle this in front of your Chicago crowd. Yeah. And every one of these 13,000 people are leaving thinking, you know what? Next time Ali goes for the title, it'll be here in Chicago and I'm going to be front row for it. I know next time he's going to get this title.
I mean, if it's a next time, there could be a next time, but it might not be with this company. So, I mean, here's the thing. First of all, it was a very good match. Some great babyface comebacks here. Whether or not, like, I have to think that, you know, this whole, like, do you think that they brought Ali back at this point just for this show? Like, just to, you know, kind of peak him, you know, for the Chicago match.
I think having Theory beat the shit out of him every week on TV, getting the better of him in every segment leading into this, including three times on Monday, so that he could come out all decked out in his Chicago gear to lose to Theory. Sure.
Here's the thing. Okay.
Don't ever try and leave our company. That's what I got from this.
You know, on some level, like, we could theorize that maybe this entire feud is just their way of embarrassing Mustafa Ali in some sort of sick way. But ultimately, I kind of feel like the joke will be on them, because if you're a Mustafa Ali fan, you're a fan of his because of his fantastic wrestling. And of course you want to see him win, but you certainly, I don't personally think you become less of a fan of him when you see him work his ass off to deliver a great match and be booked to lose. You know, I think he still gained a lot of fans here and certainly a lot of great sentiment for whenever his contract is up.
Yeah, I just feel he's in the same Ricochet role, unfortunately.
That's never going to make this guy champion, John. They're like, even a U.S. champion is kind of hard for me to see.
No, then he's below the Ricochet level. And sure. And this felt like the end of this. Like, I don't know where Ali goes after this.
Sitting out that contract.
Actually, it would be priceless if he won the title, like, tomorrow.
Oh, he'll probably win. I should take that back.
He wins it in, like, the next city.
I think he could win the 24/7 championship.
Okay, well, you could set your sights on that. Theory took a selfie with him.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Main event time, Cody Rhodes against Seth Rollins in the Hell in a Cell. Rollins is out in polka dots for the match.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Tommy Dreamer was walking out here. So there's a massive chant for Cody before his music even plays. I mean, he just felt like the biggest star on this show. As he's walking out, this place is going crazy for him. Corey Graves says that this city has historical significance for Cody. In fact, this very arena was integral in his journey away from WWE. Very nice sentiment, but he is confusing the Allstate Arena with the Now Arena, which are not the same.
Yeah, was he referring to another incident, like, during the WWE?
No, he said while he was away from WWE.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that.
Anyway, Cody removes his jacket, and there is like a hush that falls upon this crowd. And I thought it lasted for, up until Seth brought the table out, it almost felt way like this crowd was a bit uncomfortable at what they were watching.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of...
And my timeline was very mixed. I think there was... And I think that there were a lot of people that, in this day and age, I think they genuinely care about these wrestlers and their well-being. And yes, you can look at what a gutsy performance this is, but I saw a lot of concern for people about this during the beginning of this. And if this was a wise decision, that maybe should have been a decision taken away from Cody.
Well, again, without being a doctor, I cannot tell you whether or not something like this is different from... I cannot tell you how much more damage, you know, he would have risked himself doing like this permanently than something else. Again, I will say I feel more comfortable with a muscle injury than, you know, something involving the neck and the head.
Which he would not have been doing the match if that was the case of a neck or head injury.
And I have to honestly, like, you know, have at least some faith in the medical professionals in the back that would have cleared him for this sort of match and this sort of performance. Again, I'd love to hear from somebody in the medical field about, you know, what this sort of tear would be like and the amount of risk that he was taking compared to, you know, something else.
Yeah, I mean, for what it was, though, I mean, it was just an unbelievable performance. And I thought from both, like, I don't think Seth should be shortchanged in.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
This is much horrific.
This is much of an accomplishment for Seth as it is for Cody Rhodes. I mean, he is working with a man who basically can only work with half his body, right? And, you know, the bulk of the heavy lifting literally was on Seth Rollins.
So he starts off, and early on, he is able to hit a disaster kick, and he's wincing in pain, and then hits a Cody cutter. And this crowd is just like, they're stunned at what they're watching and processing at the beginning of this. He goes for a crossroads, and Seth stops it by raking him in the eye. And Cody applies a figure four. Seth gets to the rope and then climbs to the floor, getting out a kendo stick to start nailing Cody with it, jamming the kendo stick into the pectoral region, and then sending Cody into the fence. Cody is using his left arm for offense. Like, you can even see, like, he can't even lift this arm. It's like, It is so debilitating for him. The steel steps are incorporated and blasted onto the bad side of Cody. And then Seth reveals that he has brought a polka dot weightlifting belt and begins whipping Cody with the belt over and over again, which is going to just make his trip home that much more comfortable.
Well, listen,
welts all over your back.
Hey, man, if you're going to go out anyway, then sure, why not? This is a guy who's willing to burn himself, you know, on TV just for a TV match.
So then a table is brought out by Rollins, and this crowd just comes alive at this point at the sight of the table, to the point that they're chanting, "Thank you, Rollins." And Rollins ends up setting up the table and missing a splash, crashing through the table. And it's Cody that takes the polka dot weightlifting belt, tosses it away, and he goes under the ring, and he has his own bag with a cowbell inside. And this leads to our impromptu cowbell match, between a Texas bull rope match between these two in the middle of the ring, where he challenges Rollins to tie his wrist to the rope. And they have this tug of war, ending with Cody nailing him with the cowbell and generating a two count. Cody then stops a power bomb, hits the first crossroads of the match, which Rollins kicks out of. And Rollins just snaps the arm into the mat and power bombs Cody through a table in the corner, and they've got this camera angle down at mat level, and right at 2.5, Cody on his bad side gets the shoulder up, and it was an incredible near fall, because you're seeing the bad side of the arm and how much it takes him just to get the shoulder off of the mat. Rollins brings out the sledgehammer, and he is stopped by Cody. Seth goes for the pedigree. Cody counters it, and Cody hits the heel turn. the pedigree.
I mean, in this context, though, I'm not so sure.
I'm just saying he finally hit the move.
Yes, yes.
He hits it, and Cody continues going after him, slides into the ring, and by the way, the pedigree was a kick out for Rollins. And then as Rollins gets back into the ring, he nails Cody with a curb stomp. Rollins then hits a crossroads. Cody rolls through. He hits his own. So both are down, courtesy of the crossroads that each one has hit. And Cody beats him to the sledgehammer. He can't hold on to it with his arm. He kicks the sledgehammer away from Seth and hits back-to-back crossroads, stops, takes the sledgehammer, and nails Seth with the sledgehammer, keeping him down in 24 minutes and 21 seconds. What's going to be a memorable, memorable match, and one that is what was both gruesome and compelling to watch for the 24 and a half minutes that they had. But this will be a match that is going to always be tied to Cody.
Yes, it will be. And I think, you know, when it comes time for Seth Rollins to have that retrospective about his career, this is as much, again, his performance and his masterpiece. I will say as well, I was not expecting this, even with the injury. You know, I think at most, Cody could have come out here. He could have, done a few spots. And I think even that Cody Cutter attempt on its own into a stomp from Seth Rollins, for instance, 1, 2, 3, it would have been not as satisfying. But I think we would have all understood, especially seeing the visual of what that injury looked like. The fact that they ended up having the type of match that they ended up having is just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Using, you know, this real life injury to some great storytelling advantage. The bull rope was really interesting to me because I had wondered if that was always the plan or if it was brought in here as some sort of measure to maybe help the fact that he only had one side to work with and maybe allowed him some sort of, you know, extra gimmickry to get through the match. In either case, I thought that it was used very effectively. I think the Triple H callbacks with the sledgehammer were also very well used. And ultimately, a storyline that they kind of hit on only in this final week is the fact that both of them are after Triple H's throne. And Seth Rollins, of course, you know, somebody who very much thinks that he's the rightful owner of it. And Cody Rhodes also thinking that as well. So I thought that was a really nice touch and effectively used here. But beyond that, I mean, we saw a lot here in the form of like the crossroads counters. We almost had like a Newton All Japan Pro Wrestling no sell type of exchange here between, you know, Cody getting hit with Seth Rollins crossroads and then toughing it out so that he could hit his own before the double down. And then the finish itself, the two crossroads and ending with the sledgehammer, again, very symbolic of the Triple H throne storyline. Just a wonderful piece of storytelling here, I would say, and an incredible, incredible professional wrestling performance from both men.
Yeah, and you come out of it with Cody, in fact, winning all three of the matches, which was, I think that's really significant of, you know, this kind of a match that you very well could have had Seth just win and you have the out. But instead, I think for just the legend of this match, the way it worked out, I think they went for like this, the incredible gutsy performer gutting out this victory. And this is an incredible three match series that they had from WrestleMania to Backlash. And now this one very different from the other two. But all to me, incredible matches when you look at them. And I think with Seth as well, like that's, I'm very interested to see where he goes after this, because just looking at like the Raw side of things, my thought was that it is now the time you sort of turn Seth around into a babyface role, because you really need some babyfaces and you don't really need another mid-card heel that Seth is at the moment. So I'm kind of curious where he goes after this as well. But I think there's going to be a lot of interest in Raw tomorrow night just to see the follow-up of this and how much circulation these photos are going to get. People that did not watch the show, and this is going to be one of those that I think people are going to seek it out just because it's, I mean, this is going to have a lot of attention for all the reasons that we've listed.
It's the type of performance that almost makes you wonder if like any mainstream press might pick it up, because it's not just storyline. Like you saw on TV, you know, somebody looking like that go through an incredible physical feat, having this sort of match. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And if they certainly, like, honestly, they could have turned Rollins as a babyface at any point, and this crowd would have bought into it, because time and time again, like, despite maybe how you and I might feel about that fake laugh, in ring, he has always been a tremendous performer. And every single time he does one of these matches, whether it be against Cody or whether it be against Roman Reigns, he is flirting with the crowd, really wanting to cheer for him. And they did here in this match. So they just have to pull that trigger. And, you know,
all you have to do tomorrow is Cody gives his heartfelt speech tomorrow night. Seth confronts him, comes out, and instead it's the two embrace in the middle after this trilogy that they have had.
Didn't they already do that? I guess he came out and challenged him again, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I think to like cap off the feud and the two just, you know, that could be a direction you go. You really need baby faces at this moment. One other thought that does come to mind as well is that I think after you see something like this, I think like it's really tough. I would say, like, if you are a performer, like, and you're dealing with an injury, I think it's really hard to have both. Like, you're conflicted, I think, by, you know, the amount that it took to go through with a match like this. And at the same time, you want your locker room to be able to listen to their bodies that are might not have anything as grotesque as this visually. But at the same time, like, it does send a message about, like, how can I complain when I just watched this from somebody else in our locker room?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You do sort of set a precedent. At the same time, I mean, these moments are sort of like the magic of, like, sports that we kind of, you know, put on a pedestal, whether it be in a real sporting activity or the Olympics or, you know, in professional wrestling. I mean, this was, I think, a special circumstance considering that it was the main event. It was the only Hell in a Cell match on a show called Hell in a Cell. I feel like there's some extra leeway being given to a main eventer in a scenario like this where a show completely hinges on him. If it was somebody injured, let's say on a, I don't know, undercard match or a kickoff match, for instance, I don't think they'd be allowed to go out looking like this. So, but yeah, like, if you're talking about an independent wrestling show where, like, a wrestler has this sort of injury and wants his little moment in front of, like, 23 people, maybe it sets that precedent. But I don't feel like the WWE did wrong in this scenario.
It would have been an interesting dilemma that let's just say he had the partial tear. And do you go ahead and risk a full tear by going out and doing a main event match? That's a really difficult question, because are you just looking at tonight versus, okay, this guy could be out for a month, but a full tear, he's out a lot longer. Instead, the full tear, it's like the damage is done at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer would be yes in this scenario. But again, considering the fact that it's the only Hell in a Cell match on this show, and because, you know, he's arguably the biggest babyface on the show. And let's also remember, like, this is professional wrestling. They could have just gone out there and delivered a 5-minute match. You know, that was still satisfying while being protective. They instead went all out. Again, no pun intended here, with the match, and focused the story of the match on that injury, working over that injury throughout the whole thing. And I don't know if that's just simply them saying, well, he's going to go for surgery anyway, let's just kind of kill this thing as much as we can. But I, again, seeing the result tonight, it's hard for me to find a complaint.
Yeah, no, it was certainly going to be the most talked about thing from the show. Just a few news items before we go to feedback. So the update coming out of Rampage to set up the interim championship is that we will have the Battle Royal on Wednesday. The winner of that Battle Royal will take on Jon Moxley in the main event on Wednesday. And then next weekend at Dominion, Hiroshi Tanahashi will take on Hirooki Goto. And the winner of that will face the whoever comes out of Wednesday for the interim championship at the Forbidden Door. And it's worth noting that Goto, it was one of the few that did beat Moxley in the G1 a number of years ago. But I don't know how many people are holding their breath that it will be Goto going to Chicago for the Forbidden Door.
Yeah, they could surprise us all. And maybe it wouldn't be Mox even. You know, maybe it'll be Goto versus, you know, Peter Avalon, if he makes his way into the Battle Royal.
I imagine honestly, it will not be Goto and Peter Avalon at the United Center. That would be my educated guess. Yeah. Also, Scorpio Sky noting that he went into Rampage with his knee bothering him and then strained a muscle going from his knee through his groin. And after that happened during the match with Dante Martin, his right leg was useless after that. And he is hoping that it is nothing serious. So wishing the best for him. That's unfortunate. And then we had the story today that Bryan Danielson was unable to fly to Massachusetts for a meet and greet. And the venue had stated that he was injured, that coming from Fightful. And then the Wrestling Observer site has they cited two sources that have noted that he's only expected to be out 1 to 2 weeks. So if that is accurate, doesn't sound like it's too serious. He wasn't on TV this week after the Anarchy match, but would prevent him from being in the Battle Royal on Wednesday, which is unfortunate because I looked at him as a really interesting player in this whole thing to potentially come out of that, at least come out of the Battle Royal, and gives you an excuse to do Danielson and Moxley on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, at least at this point, you know, their choice is kind of made for them, and really it does feel like Mox is the favorite. Honestly, it feels like it's just a very complicated way of getting to Moxley versus Tanahashi. But the effort is what we appreciate, right? In them trying to tell that story. Before we get to some calls here, let's go to some super chats. And we thank all of you guys watching us live at youtube.com/postwrestling. Please subscribe, everybody. We're trying to get those numbers up to get these shows a bit more visible as possible. We go to Sam, who sends $5 Australian. Thank you for the support, Sam. He says, not too often I get to catch you live in Australia, so just a tip for the support. It's awesome. Thank you, Samuel. DJ Convoy sends $5 as well. He says, dangerous and irresponsible to let Rhodes compete. And winning is baffling. WWE should be held to task for this. Cody should be held to task for this.
I mean, you're going to have that response from a lot of people. And I think not knowing, you know, what was assessed with Cody. I mean, we are going based on, like, visually, it looked horrifying. And I can't say, like, that opinion
again,
is wrong.
But again, we're not doctors, you know. Like, sometimes bruises are... Again, I honestly can't say, but it's also, I think, wrong for us to say like what they shouldn't have done either, but without knowing a bit more detail about exactly like what this sort of thing looks like. I mean, you've seen, John, UFC fights where like guys continued after like having muscles that were like, you know, like pulled off and, you know, down to like, you know, a portion of their bicep, for instance.
They could have told him like very well that, like, listen, you have done as much damage as you're going to, it looks terrible. Mm-hmm. You're not going to do anything worse. I actually, of what he lists here, I would not be holding Cody to task for this. I think if he was willing to go ahead with this, like that is the company and their medical staff to make that call. If you're Cody, you're headlining this show and you want to go ahead with it, I totally understand having that mindset to want to go ahead with it. And, you know, if their medical staff deemed it too dangerous, yeah, you would hope that they would step in and do that. I can't say if that was the case or not, but I completely understand why Cody wanted to go ahead and do this. And the fact that he did 25 minutes of a match, like they earmarked that amount of time for the match. So they obviously had confidence that he could go ahead and do this of what had been laid out. They could have just structured a 10-minute match and it's Seth just destroying him and limiting like what was necessary to get to a finish and a satisfying enough match, but they blocked off the last half hour of the match for this of the show for this.
I'd go as far as to say, I mean, I know it was probably an incredibly painful, you know, 25 minutes for Cody, but I think in his brain he was loving every second of it. This is the type of moment he's been after. You know, every time he's gone out there and has fallen through like a giant ladder or has lit himself on fire for the sake of wanting or dove off of a top of a cage with a giant moonsault or something like that. He's been looking for moments like these. He's been looking for his Mick Foley Hell in a Cell type of moment.
This was that for his career. And you can listen, it might sound crazy to the average person. For a wrestler, if that is what you are seeking, it's like, okay, I might do worse damage to this, but like this is what I'm doing this for, and I am going to be able to live off of this, and this will be remembered for as long as I'm wrestling. People are going to remember this performance, and that is worth the risk that I am willing to take and the potential additional damage I might do. Like that is a calculated decision that some of these performers make.
Traverse Cummings sends us a couple super chats. First, $2.79 just to support, and then $6.99. Thank you very much, Traverse. He says, side question to me. Are you looking forward to the new Dragon Ball Z movie? Also, that was a great B-level pay-per-view from WWE. Congrats to Cody, or props to Cody. I actually have no idea what this Dragon Ball Z movie is about. I've not really been paying attention much to Dragon Ball Z news, so can't say I am, so apologies. But thank you for the support anyway. Bob the Builder sends $5 and asks, if Rock can't do WrestleMania next year, do you see Cody versus Roman main eventing?
I would say that would be, and I think that feels like an even bigger match now. And if all parties are healthy and available, I would, you could make the argument that like for long term, that would be what you want to be building to. As it is, if you can't get a definitive answer from Dwayne Johnson until next year, and I mean that would be the place to do that.
I mean, Cody's motive for entering the WWE is to win the championship, and you know, when he stated it the night after WrestleMania, it might have been hot enough, I think, to at least be a SummerSlam main event. But maybe coming off of a performance like this, I mean, there's certainly a chance that you can main event a WrestleMania with it. And I would say that there's still a chance of him doing it, even if it's not against Roman Reigns. They do have two championships, of course. So, you know, we don't know if Roman will be undisputed champion for the whole year. He could potentially lose one and maybe defend one against The Rock while Cody goes up against somebody else to win that championship. But that is a major storyline that I think they will, you know, really, you know, see to fruition probably at some point in the next year. Thank you, Bob. And finally, we got a Payne who sends £2 just to say didn't watch the show, but just wanted to show support. Thank you so much for the constant support there from all of you guys sending in your super chats. Now we go to some phone calls here available to our Double Double Plus patrons. And let's go start off here with Ryan. Ryan, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Ryan, what's up? What'd you think of Hell in a Cell?
Man, both these shows, the backlash and the show tonight, people just go crazy for tables. I don't know what's going on with the fans nowadays. What did you guys think about Bobby Lashley trotting out with the fake championship? And do you think they might go to him, pivot to him sooner than Cody because Cody's hurt?
It's a good question whether or not like the Cody injury changes anything. But for me, I just kind of felt like it was him saying, you know, hey, I'm done with Omos. My sights are set on the championship. And to me, it would be like a Money in the Bank situation that I'd see him maybe a likely candidate. But they could just, yeah, like upgrade him to a championship match at Money in the Bank, for instance. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I mean, they teased it. It's
Roman has to be back for that.
Yeah, that's the big if. And I think you're more so going in the Riddle direction right now. So
Just keeping him hot on the back burner.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ryan. Ryan, is this also you that's also in this room right now on this other connection?
Yes, sir. I think I got in there twice.
Got it. Did you go to the show live tonight, Ryan?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Tell us something about the live experience. Like,
okay.
I used
the On Location, which is the new, premium guest experience. And before the show, I got a meet and greet where we had like little appetizers and free beer. And then I got my picture taken with Baron Corbin. And then after that, Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch came in and I got my picture taken with them.
Okay.
So you and then they toured us around the ring. I got to touch the cage, to have my picture taken with the backdrop. So it was a pretty premium experience.
And how did the crowd seem like in your area for the main event? How were they?
They were everything that you said. They were sympathetic to Cody, but they were also, you know, loved him and loved the cowbell. But they also, I heard the chants of thank you, Seth, when he started bringing the table out, because these crowds just seem to be nuts for tables now.
Yeah.
Like it's 1996 or something.
Did you notice like that big hush after seeing the injury to Cody, like the commentators were alluding to?
Yes, I noticed it was red at first, and then it, as the match went on, it turned, black or purple or blue almost.
Oh, it was every shade of, you know,
every shade of the rainbow.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ryan. Hopefully you had a good time tonight.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. All right, let's go up next to Hanzi. Hanzi, hey. Welcome to the show. What's up?
What's going on? I was going to say that, I again, as always, the pay-per-views with WWE, they always, like, you know, they do well, like, as one-offs. Just the creative. When it's AEW, I'm already scrambling to go, okay, so what's next for these guys? What can probably be done? But, like, I just know with WWE, I'm going to probably get these matches again tomorrow for, like, the next couple of weeks, right? But as a one-off show, I got to say, like, you know, the women's match and the Hell in a Cell match are probably the strongest matches. And, again, the whole Ali thing, it's like, again, if this were AEW, like, you know what I mean? Like, even if he didn't win, it just he wasn't in a position to even, like, look good at all, like, throughout the whole build. And then you think that, you know, like, they had to be doing it as an inside joke at this point. You know what I mean? I saw someone on Reddit call that Cody Rhodes had called the pedigree the Hunter Driver 96. And I thought that was awesome. And I just think that was a good one. But the thing about the Hell in a Cell match is, like, I understood. The thing is, I come from an era where, like, when a lot of people who are consuming it didn't care about, like, oh, well, just chair shots and all this stuff. People work hurt. And then, you know what I mean? And then when you started, like, over the last decade, 15 years or so, we started paying more attention to it. It's kind of like you guilted a whole fan base into going, hey, you guys should know the repercussions of what happens, and you shouldn't want, like, all these guys to, like, go balls to the wall like that, you know what I mean? And it just feels like, I understand completely. I understand the whole reasoning why Cody did it and all that. I'm just saying that it feels like we're regressing a little bit, where now that might be, like, for example, it wouldn't shock me if, like, Dave Meltzer tomorrow reported, you know, Vince McMahon really respected Cody Rhodes for doing what he did, and he's going to give him, like, a main event title shot. And to me, I just think it's going to set precedent with other people who think, oh, I got to work hurt. You know what I mean? And it feels like we're going back in a cycle. That's just my worry about it. Although I did enjoy what was being done, but like, you know what I mean? Again, I'm a wrestling fan, but at the same time, if I feel bad about what I watch, I also got to feel, because then you got people online who are like, you're going, oh, you guys really care that much, huh? Stop being pussies and all that. Like there's people already going, CM Punk is a pussy, and Cody Rhodes actually went through with shit. It's like, dude, come on, are you serious? Like, that's like the one thing. I
don't even want you to boost those people, Hanzi, by mentioning them. I mean, different situations. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Again, I think this is a different circumstance. And again, without any of us being medical professionals, I think I'm open to the idea that there are injuries that look worse than they actually may appear. And I'm hoping that this is one of those situations. You know, we know, I think, enough about the neck. We know enough about the brain that if it was either of those two things, I agree with you, I would have not been cool with it. If it was Kota Ibushi with his, you know, with a separated shoulder, I don't think I would have been cool with it. But a muscle tear, again, I would love to hear from a medical professional, you know, in the days ahead about exactly what the prognosis for something like that is, and whether or not this was a risk that was educated, and considering the circumstances of this main event being what it was, maybe a risk that they considered was worthwhile to take.
All right, no, that's cool. And listen, and you know, you're totally right about not boosting those people up. The thing is, right? I don't, if you go on Twitter, right? Even people you don't follow, because I guess people are leaving, like, the social media platform. What it does now is that on your main timeline, they have topics. So even people who you're not following, and they get boosted up, you see, like, you know, in wrestling top. So, because my algorithm is all wrestling, even people I don't follow, they pop up on your timeline. It's like they kind of do it on purpose. So that's why I was seeing it. So when I saw, like, many propped up accounts saying, like, oh, CM Punk couldn't go through with it, it's like, come on. Like, it's like, are we really getting there as fans that we are going to, like, shit on someone for, like,
we're not. Only a few people. I mean, maybe a number of people are, but those are the same people that, like, you know, are causing a shitstorm every single Thursday when the ratings come out. And I choose not to pay attention to them. And I all don't right, think well, you should either.
Well, you know, guys, listen, good show as always, guys. And yeah, take it easy. And thanks for letting me on, man. Peace out.
Thanks,
thank you, Hanzi, as always. Let's go up next to Alex. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can. Hey.
Oh, okay. Sweet. So I watched this show today, and I was watching it at home. And first, I just want to say, like, that women's triple threat was fantastic. Like, mm-hmm. like you guys mentioned, WWE does such a fantastic job with booking triple threats, especially I noticed with the women, like, they always do a really good job with those. And I think I love that match. And then mm-hmm. for the main event, like, when Cody took off the jacket, like, I love horror, I love gore, but the minute I saw that, I immediately just turned away, and I had such a visceral reaction, and I just both loved and hated that main event for that reason. That's like, just seeing Seth drive the kendo stick into it, just doing all those spots with that injury, I had to look away so many times.
Certainly. Now, because you're a fan of horror, I mean, we know it's an art. You know, it's an art to make something look gory and not actually have it hurt. Much of the illusion is you know, applicable in professional wrestling as well, where a spot like that, you know, sticking a kendo stick into somebody's arm, Rollins could have been completely holding back and could have been the lightest thing in the world. We don't know, because, I mean, I'm assuming you have never wrestled a man with a kendo stick with a torn pec before.
Pretty much, yeah.
So,
but no, I was just going to say, like, I think for me at this point, what I would like to see is, like, all the other Roman challengers are kind of now, like, at a level beneath Cody at this point. And, like, in my own head fantasy booking this, I just want to see Cody come back, like, at a Royal Rumble, if it's a serious injury, which I hope it's not. I hope he's okay, but I guess we'll know tomorrow. But if he comes back, like, at a Rumble, wins that, and then gets his huge main event in Inglewood and just wins the title, that's what I want to see at this point, because everyone else just seems so second rate at this point, which is horrible, especially like having that be the reason for it, him working with such an injury. But like you said, it does come down to like the visual of it.
Mm. Thank you so much for the call, Alex.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great job.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, all of our Double Double Plus patrons, for their phone calls. We can we always allow them the opportunity to call in for these pay-per-view post shows, whether it be WWE or AEW. And now we go to forum.postwrestling.com, where all of our patrons at postwrestlingcafe.com can leave written feedback. Would you like to start, John?
All right. Let's go to our first one here is Manny from Pacoima. Much like MJF was the talk of Dynamite and Punk's announcement was the talk of Rampage, Cody was all we will probably remember about Hell in a Cell. He must really want the adoration of fans to put himself through this match, and boy, did it really heighten the match. I do wonder if Money in the Bank plans will change, but nonetheless, much respect for Cody for continuing with the match. Do you feel if this happened on Dynamite, the crowd would be against Cody? I have no idea how to answer that question.
If it happened on Dynamite, the crowd, okay, because like AEW, at least when Cody was there, they were kind of anti Cody. I don't know. It's really hard to say. I mean, they're almost very different, chapters of Cody Rhodes' career. You know, you can argue that what was happening towards Cody at the end was, that effect, like those reactions were not just an effect of maybe what he was willing to put himself through in the ring, but also the content of his promos and the content of the character. Whereas in the WWE, I don't think he's had any of those issues. All of his promos have been connecting the way they exactly should. And I would say, you know, by really all accounts, like they've been doing a fantastic job of pushing him. But when you get to this point in this main event, in this situation with that injury, I thought it was almost a perfect storm, you know, set up for an ultimate babyface performance. So hard to say. And we go to Kate, who wants to say, overall, a very good show, as many of WWE's lesser pay-per-views are these days. I love the women's match, and I thought the show elevated some new people, which they need to do with Roman taking a lesser role. I love the women's match, although I wouldn't have had Asuka take the pin. She still feels like the fresher matchup for either Bianca or Becky. Be that as it may, I mean, Becky versus Bianca is the bigger match, you know, even if it's a rematch, I think to a more casual audience, you know. It might be something that they're building up for Money in the Bank, but it's big enough, I think, to be a SummerSlam co-main event.
I think that's where you want to go. And this was going to be a pay-per-view where Bianca and Becky were going to get wins in separate matches. And instead, you had to do this makeshift match and keep those, give a reason to go back to it. So
it depends on
the direction that you want to be going. If that's what's the best way to get to Bianca or Becky, that was the finish tonight.
Yeah. Where do you think the pressure on top tier wrestlers like Cody, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi, either from themselves or their employers, to perform with pretty serious injuries, although the full extent of Cody's might be better than it looked, will stop? Or will it? Yeah, Kate, we've kind of spent almost the entire show, you know, talking about that aspect. Again, not knowing the extent of this sort of injury, it's hard for me to say. But we're also talking about a company that, like, I think has taken more steps for safety than they have ever have in the past. You know, this is a company that at one point were stopping matches because of blood. So,
and then they're not doing that anymore. I mean, but yeah. To the point about that, I mean, yeah, I think are we going to see situations where, you know, there's a potential concussion in the middle of a match? I mean, we saw with Jeff Hardy last week, and I know we're switching companies now, but that match, you know, continued. But then, you know, they pulled him from TV this week. And mm-hmm. I don't think you're ever going to see a consistent line, but I will say, I think there is going to be a consistency among performers that I would imagine the vast, vast, vast majority of people in a spot like Cody's in a main event situation would want to go through with the match. And that to me is not pressure from management. That is pressure from these performers to push themselves in these kinds of situations. So I do not think it is a case of just upsetting the company or something like that. I believe Cody 100% wanted to go through with this regardless of what anyone else thought.
Yeah, no doubt. Again, I also really would like to emphasize perhaps, you know, further investigation into the differences between a muscle tear versus, you know, this sort of thing that we've been talking about for decades now when it comes to neck injuries and brain injuries. I think those are things we know more than enough not to play around with. But this sort of muscle tear, I'm willing to at least, you know, be open to the idea that this was something that was relatively safe enough to work with.
Yeah, we'll have to, you know, rely on people that are experts in that field as well. But that is all the feedback that we have. I think we are at the end of things. So before we wrap up, just a quick overview of what's coming up the next couple of days. We will not be doing the new show on Monday because it's a late night for us tonight with Hell in a Cell. But we will be back Monday night with Rewind to Raw, going through any other news that is going to be happening over the next 24 hours and developments with this story and what happens on Raw. So you check out that. And then Tuesday, we're back with the new show at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And Tuesday night for Post Wrestling Cafe members, it is going to be volume 5 of the wildly popular series, Pollock and Ting Talk.
Yes. I mean, I would say one of our main attractions at this point in the Post Wrestling Cafe, according to at least a lot of the feedback I've heard, where once a quarter, it seems, John and I get together and just talk about anything but professional wrestling.
Yes, and I am as my voice is I've really been struggling the last couple of days, but I'm gonna gut my way through it. Way I am going to perform and go and talk this
week. Oh no, how are you gonna reveal it dramatically? Maybe I'll take a kendo stick to your throat, huh?
Oh boy, I couldn't take it. I'd tap out. So that is coming up the next couple of days. We'll be doing the Post Daily News show Tuesday through Friday this week. So look out for that. And then all of our other regular shows, the return of MCU Later on Thursday with Ms. Marvel kicking off on Disney Plus. So Waiting and WH Park starting off a brand new season of MCU Later.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's another character. I mean, I know a little about, but probably not as much as many of you. So if you guys are going to watch it, let us know what you thought.
Yes, absolutely. So postwrestlingcafe.com. This week you will get Talk. You will get MCU Later, Rewind to SmackDown, and the audio version of the Post Daily News show is available in your podcast app with your RSS feed as well. So that is all for us. I'm going to say goodbye because my voice is about to die. So for Wei Ting, thank you for listening, everybody. And that concludes your Hell in a Cell post show.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.